Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Star Party people, it's me, Sandy. And I'm here with the illustrious Bess Matassa. And we are so excited about our topic today, which is worth, all things worth. And it's an interesting topic and a layered, complex topic. And I don't even quite know where to begin, but that's okay because I have an Aries with me. And he's really good at beginning. So
yeah, I am raring to begin this buffet of beingness, of value, of shiny treats ready to be unwrapped and popped into our mouths.
Ooh, I have a shiny treat waiting for me. It's like a Cadbury egg. And I'm like, I want to unwrap that foil.
Is it a Cadbury? Is this a literal Cadbury egg that you got?
It's actually one. Yeah.
Is it one of the big fatties or is it one of the minis?
No, it's just a normal little one.
Okay. Still offering up its own potential and possibility.
I'm getting really literal. I'm like, shiny treat? I know what that is.
Yeah, the unwrapping is really something. Now I'm thinking about those, what are those candies? Any candy where you kind of twist the wraps from either end and kind of unfurl it, and it's that big kind of fat globe in the center. These are all very taurine, Taurus season themes, of course. You know,
it makes me think of like childhood, you know, where you're more interested in just like these actions, these, and candy is such a big thing for kids. Where it's just like, you can hear the crinkle. It takes you right back to childhood.
Yeah.
I think this is going to have something to do with what we end up talking about.
Oh, totally. And that feeling of like the intactness of the thing beneath, like you see the shape, you see the fullness of it, and you know it's waiting for you. There's like an element of surprise, but there's also like an element of like expectation in the fullness that I think really segs us well into this topic of birth. I'm now thinking of Willy Wonka too, when the kids would like start to peel the chocolate and then you'd see the gold just sort of glinting out from the edge of the chocolate bar.
Ooh, I just weirdly got chills. Okay. I don't know if it's just I want chocolate or if there's something about this topic that's going to be really interesting. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. So listeners, this is maybe the most vital episode where you need to get your physical material snacks actually intact. To like accompany you through the episode. This is not just metaphor. This is materiality. Yeah. We're in Taurus country. We're in the physical realm. So get them lined up, the whole buffet.
Get them lined up. Think about the experience of things, your senses. Get all your senses ready. You know, start looking at the lights and smelling the smells.
It's going to be technicolor, tangible technicolor here.
Yeah. Oof. So what are your thoughts? I mean, I know we just covered some of them.
Some sensations. Yeah.
Yes.
So I was having some, you know, and this is not a shocker again. I was surprising myself with my own thoughts, not because I'm like such a brilliant thinker, but just because like these symbols present so differently. I think like there's, I don't know, it's such a rich, it always like startles me and like enlivens me how rich this language is because both you and I have been working with these symbols since we were kids. And yet every time they come around to me, you know, whether it's Taurus season or a different transit of a planet, they present differently. And so this time, you know, over the past few weeks, kind of leading up to the beginning of Taurus season, you know, I was really in a different experience of Aries season that I had experienced historically. And one of the things that was really coming through for me with Aries that had never really come through so vibrantly before was the idea of vulnerability in Aries. I'd never really thought of Aries energy as vulnerable. I thought of it as innocent in the sense of like beginning again or seemingly coming out of nothing. But I hadn't thought of the vulnerability that Aries energy sort of embodies around the sense of aliveness. That Aries maybe more than any other sign stands in the face of death, not even in denial of death, but because like death isn't even part of the scene. Like it's just so much in the vital current of aliveness that death isn't even considered. And yet that renders this sign incredibly vulnerable because there isn't maybe the full consideration of the full continuum of life. There's just like the standing in like the vibrancy of the aliveness. And I was having a lot of experiences during Aries season, and as a very, you know, as many listeners know, a very Aries strong archetypal being that I am, of like feeling really like the singularity of Aries and like the vulnerability that like it takes so much to stand in that way. And yet at any moment we could be smote or smitten or smited or whatever, like taken mm-hmm. out. And like that life is so tenuous, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I was kind of like going from that place into beginning to feel into Taurus season, I also started to sense Taurus energy in a little bit of a different way, in a little bit more of a courageous stance than I would have maybe historically, like how much courage it takes to find comfort in the face of like the inevitability of death. And maybe that Taurus is the first sign that actually starts to consider death. We think about the Scorpio mm-hmm. end of the axis. We think about that polarity. And I never really like felt death inside of Taurus because there's so much vitality and vibrancy and that continuation of like the growth that begins in Aries. And so I started to think about like the courage of comfort and how courageous it is to claim our comfort here and to claim enjoyment here. And of course, all of us are positioned differently to stake those claims. And some of us are denied comfort, you know, structurally through, you know, all sorts of sort of systemic, you know, modes of oppression. And I don't know, I just was like really equating worthiness with ability to find comfort. And then was really thinking about how much, like, how much it takes to claim that comfort. And then lastly, I was thinking, I was having all these like really robust images of things getting filled. Like I was thinking about the fullness of Taurus energy connected to worthiness and thinking about like receptacles getting filled up, whether it's like, you know, like an ice cream cone getting filled with like soft serve or like pouring some liquid into a bowl or anything where something is a receptacle that receives. And I think historically I've thought a little bit about Taurus as sort of like the response to Aries, like Aries penetrates and Taurus sort of lies back and receives. But it really started to come home to me more this time around, like how powerful the act of receiving or becoming, like having the right to receive, like is. And I don't know, just that feeling of like being filled as like a much more active, I don't know, way of being or way of embodying energy than I'd thought of before. So that's where I landed for now.
Yeah, we could just like ricochet off what you just said for probably an hour. We probably will. It's interesting, this talk about comfort and the courage of comfort, because, you know, I have a new baby and just so happens she's a Taurus moon and she's very like, I mean, I only have one baby, so I have no idea what other babies are like, but she needs to be held constantly. Like she wants to be held night and day all the time. And she likes to like be on her own, you know, she likes to like kick around and do her own thing, but like it's comfort that she wants. And it, more than that, it's security. And I'm always thinking about like just a vulnerable little baby, like who just wants to feel safe in the world, you know, like, and this security and the connection between security and comfort and what that means is something that is just striking me right now. Like how much of what we find to be pleasurable or comfortable actually comes down to security, right? Like and on a deep level, like on it, like we were all little babies, you know, and we were all like that vulnerable at some point. And we were all looking for these two things that were really just probably became like one thing, like security became what was comfortable, right? Like, you know, our sense of like, okay, I'm safe now is like, that's, those are the things that then we may kind of crave later on. Or like, you know, I don't know, you know, obviously we grow out of needing to be held all the time, but that kind of like pleasure that comes from just like being cozy and being connected and being like feeling good physically and feeling, you know, that there's like gentleness and a warmth around us. It's so interesting to think of comfort security and death all in like one basket, you know?
Yeah. Listeners at home, enjoy those treats in your singular basket. Yeah.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. When you're talking about comfort and security, I'm also starting to like feel into the dynamism of that search or how that changes. You know, because there's also this edge in comfort, you know, and all of us have this where there's certain situations or habit patterns that are comfortable, but actually aren't nutritive, or like that we get a sense, you know, whatever that pattern is or a relationship, that like, what is that edge where we like continually dynamically commit to searching for what brings truer security in a given moment, or what is actually pleasurable versus like what is comfortable, and like what that edge looks like.
Yeah.
You know, which feels like a lot of the work of discovering our worth too, you know, because right. there's always that kind of edge, and it feels like the edge between Taurus Aries, but also the edge between Taurus Scorpio, of like those moments of considering how some temporary discomfort or kind of agitation of that zone can also beget a deeper worthiness or a deeper experience of pleasure that actually fits the person that we are right now.
Totally. And I don't know if this is confusing or add something, but also the edge between Taurus and Gemini, because as we are like taking these kind of like subconscious comforts of like, okay, you know, for example, you know, disordered eating, you know, I have a history of overeating, and that would come from like just a like unconscious sense of like, I need something to fill that spot. I need to feel secure, or whatever that was, you know. We could get into it, but probably save time and not. But, you know, but the Gemini function of like, well, let's talk about it. Let's like, what's actually happening here? You know, one of the ways that I worked through that disordered eating was every time I had an urge to like just reach for something, I would say to myself, am I lonely? Am I hungry? Am I angry? You know, I try to ask a bunch of questions in a very conscious, thoughtful Gemini way. And if the answer was like, I'm hungry, I would eat, you know. If the answer was I'm lonely, I would be like, okay, well, maybe let's think about that for a minute. Do I still want to eat this food? Okay, I'll eat it, you know. But at least now I'm thinking about the loneliness. It's conscious. It's like in my mind.
Oh, this is like blowing my mind right now, because I'm thinking, and maybe this is just like my esoteric musing that amounts to nothing, but I'm thinking about the qualities of emptiness and fullness. And I'm thinking about, you know how I'm obsessed with like the quincunxes and the inconjunct aspect, or AKA the inconjunct aspect in astrology. And I'm thinking about Gemini and the sign of Scorpio now as both about like one of their kind of vens is connected to the ability to be with emptiness or emptying or like clearing a little bit of space, which I think associated with all air energy, like that idea of like emptying or creating a gap. And then I'm thinking about it now with Scorpio too. And when you're speaking about disordered eating, I don't have that history, but I have a history of a very complicated relationship, you know, at times with drugs and alcohol. And when I think about that pause that you're talking about, that kind of like pause and the inquiry, I'm thinking also about the ability to be with like the emptiness before we fill. And that doesn't have to be like a physicalized act of like reaching for the food or the drink or whatever it is. But there is something about that physicalized creating that gap that's also about the metaphorical or the energetic connection, I think, that we see in the Taurus Scorpio axis, and then we also see in the transition from Taurus to Gemini, and maybe the whole wheel of astrology. There's all these ways in which we can play about these, how these energies follow each other, but maybe the whole pattern is fill empty, you know, or fill, you know, like gather clear. And we can think about that maybe in the rhythm to a certain extent. I don't know if it works fully, but like, you know, maybe Aries is a little bit of an emptying energy. It's a little bit of an outputting, you know, and then Taurus gathers, and then Gemini empties out, and then Cancer gathers. And I don't think it works through the whole cycle, but
let's keep going. It's so far so good.
And then Leo shines out, and then Virgo sieves and takes in.
Yep.
And then I think where we start to get a little bit of a question Libra actually Scorpio. Is in Libra Scorpio, which is interesting yeah. because historically they were one, at one point in history, they were one sign.
Oh, right.
So maybe it still works with that.
Interesting.
Anyway, you know, and then,
yeah. So good.
Which is another way maybe of talking about what we would have formally spoken about as masculine, feminine signs, which I think we can discard, you know, those terms at this point. I don't know how helpful they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, we're like, over that. We don't need that.
You know, and I was always seeking for other language to explain that mm-hmm. rhythm of signs. Like, is it about like generating, receiving? And that doesn't quite mm-hmm. get it either, because I think we like over culturally prize generating energies. So that makes kind of associates us with the value judgment on the generative signs as like making something, and like the receptive signs is just right. like standing yeah. back and responding. So I don't know. Maybe it's emptying.
No, fill empty. Fill empty. And you know what? Like Scorpio can be both, because yeah. like it's birth and death, right? Like yeah. it's the whole cycle. So it makes sense for it to kind of be both. You know?
Totally. Totally.
There doesn't have to be, we can have shades of gray.
Yeah, totally. Love a liminal landscape over here.
Yeah.
The Star Party Podcast headquarters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was thinking about this concept of worth, and like I Googled, you know, what's the definition of worth? And it's like usefulness, productivity. Does it have value? Is it, you know, and it started, you know, I'm like, okay, so that's so not how I'm thinking about it. But that is like, you know, a valid definition of worth is like, is it functional? What's it doing for me? Is there merit? And then thinking about self-worth, you know, that concept like really comes in strong, where when we start to think about self-worth, one way that we often kind of approach it is like, well, do I have value? You know, am I worth something? And that has to live in the action, right? Like, but what am I doing that's worthy? You know, am I doing something that makes me worthy or makes me have merit or value? And then that's where things start to go haywire, I think, on a psychological level.
Yeah.
Is that it's like, well, all of a sudden, you know, now we're in the trouble zone where I got to keep doing stuff to be worthy. And, you know, for me, this, you know, it's very personal. I have had clients who are very wedded to the idea that they need to be doing something to be worthy. And that's okay. That's where they want to live. And that, you know, like that their actions are where they want to focus. For me, I had to like teach myself out of that one. Cause I, you know, for me, that doesn't work. It worked poorly for a long time.
Familiar with that.
I'm familiar with like trying to, you know, do a lot of stuff to then feel that I'm good enough. And, you know, here we have the sign of Taurus, which is associated with worth. And Taurus is about, you know, kind of just like holding it all, holding, receiving, being, allowing. But when I was like looking up, you know, I was thinking about Taurus, like words to use for Taurus. And one of them was fecund. I always say it wrong.
I love a fecund. You know, I love me some fecund. Yeah. Fecundity.
Fecundity. So I searched for the definition of that one. And it's, again, productivity. It's like, oh, and I was like, oh, right. Taurus, I think of it as so like, I'm just so flowery and I'm just so overflowing with this, like with pleasure, and like, I just have it all and it just overflows, and I'm, you know, present, grounded, sensual, like just, but inherent in all of that is another kind of view of like productivity, you know, like, oh, I've produced flowers.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know exactly where to go with all this, but that's what this conversation for me is about.
Not to like go crazy here, but you're like sparking so many realizations inside of me right now, because I've been preparing and hopefully our listeners as well, because I've been preparing, I've been like really in the thick of like Taurus energy the past few days because I've been writing a new book and I've been like, just it happened to be that the chapter on Taurus is like aligned with Taurus season, lovingly, wow. lovefully. And I've been working through a year-long course that I've been offering. And of course, Taurus season is coming. So I'm preparing the Taurus season materials. And with each season, I've been really trying to sort of land on the noun that really, or like, maybe it's not even a noun, but yeah, I think they're nouns that really kind of like are the energy of the sign. And coming out of Aries season, the term that I landed on was vitality or virility. I was sort of repurposing virility out of its gendered connotations and just about like the greenness of life, the kind of like just fundamental aliveness. And so when I started to explore Taurus energy, I was looking all around for this word and I kept trying to find, you know, is it fullness? Is it flowering? Is it fecundity? Is it vibrancy? Like we move from vitality and then we move into like vibrancy, like the full color of something. And just like you, I was discovering that all of these words are connected to like a continual verb of action or producing. And I was like, do we not have a word in the English language that just is that state of ripeness that just hangs? That just like hangs in itself without having to like be at the height of production and then keep producing or whatever. And then I got like really caught in this landscape. I've been working with this author on this amazing project that's like a journey through erotics and sex and relationships and all this stuff. And she and I were having a conversation around what I think is a Greek term called kairotic time. I don't know. I think it's spelled K-A-I-R-O-T-I-C. Versus like chronos, like kairos versus chronos, and these two scales of time, and connected to the idea of ripeness. And in chronos, we see time as linear and we see us like continually, like something ripens and then it falls off the tree and then we have to produce something else, versus like kairos, where we just sort of hang in this sort of suspended, like we're caught in a moment and like enamored of. Like ripeness can just be at its full ripeness without it like leading to death or leading to have like the next thing that has to be produced or whatever. So I'm like, we gotta fucking like find a word that like, or redefine these words in a way. It's almost like Taurus is like the landscape, not tread. Like, I don't know. I never thought about Taurus as like so mysterious in this way.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, like sometimes like we get mired in this definition, these definitions of Taurus that are like very simple and straightforward and just about sensuality, but like, whoa, this is a radical sign. And like, we need to redefine ripeness or some word for that.
It's so funny because Uranus is in Taurus right now, right? Which is like helping innovate and bring in fresh new ideas. That's great. Maybe this is the moment where it does happen. And then it's also funny because Taurus is like the last sign that wants a radical shift. Like, it's like, wait, you want new language? But of course it's a language issue. You know, listeners, if you know another language that has a word that like we're missing, please write to us and let us know.
I mean, I think a little bit, and I think for some reason it's come up on this podcast before, but I think about like the Italian phrase, like la dolce far niente, like the sweetness of doing nothing, but it's not even really that, because it's not, that's not it. It's some other feeling of like really full and ample and fertile without it having being tied to either doing or not doing. You got to like break that binary.
Maybe we're missed. Maybe it's just like, I mean, I was just pregnant and it's like so physically hard, you know, like it requires so much energy. And so when I think of like a flowering tree, I'm like, oh, it's just so beautiful. It's just lingering with these full flowers. And it's just like lush and like, it just is. But like, I don't actually know what the tree is doing.
Maybe this is like some fetishized thing we have about like there being a just isness. And maybe there's not. There's just a different scale of like productivity or a different way to view the production.
Or we've got like productivity damage, which like, you know, means that we've just been so over like in this capitalized system where everything becomes, you know, a for sale sign and like a factory line, you know, that like, we just, we like need something else. We need some kind of antidote or something.
Yeah.
Oh, we're burned.
We're burned. We're burned. Oof. Well.
And it's also interesting that like Taurus is the, you know, it's ruled by Venus. It's the first sign that comes along. I mean, it's only the second sign, so it doesn't take long before, you know, a sign comes along that's ruled by Venus. But it's like Venus has to do a lot of work. I guess, you know, full disclosure, Venus is my snack, so it's kind of a good segue anyway. But Venus has to do a lot of work in the zodiac, in our, you know, in the Western, modern Western archetype here of like, in charge of pleasure, in charge of receptivity, in charge of relationships, in charge of, you know, ruler of Libra and Taurus, and like needing to be in charge of joy and peace and like, you know, ease and money and comfort and life and birth. And, you know, it's just like, there's just a lot there that, you know, a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Poor Venus. Yeah. Poor it's Venus. Interesting to think. And, you know, when we think there's so many ways that we could order the signs and, you know, kind of like continue through the wheel of the year. But it is interesting that like in our inaugural month of the astrological year, we get Mars. The Mars starts it all. And then the response is Venus. And maybe the whole conversation is really framed around that rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't know. I've been having like lots of different thoughts about Mars lately too. And like, yeah, it's a really rich thing to consider, like the work. I don't know. I'm excited for your snack to hear more about like the work of Venus too. And like what that edge is between, like activation and beingness. It feels like that's really at like the heart of this conversation. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who goes first? You want to share your little first? Snack?
I'm going to share. Yeah, I'll share my snack. It's a little bit more bite-sized, so I think we won't spend too much time on it, and then we can hop into
I feel like mine's bite-sized too, but that's good because I think we're going to.
Yeah, we've had a robust.
Yeah, we already talked for half an hour, so here we are.
Here we are. So my snack, without further ado, is trines. And I want to explain because I think we've talked about, I don't remember what episode it was, but I think we had one episode where we talked about different aspects a little bit. I know we've had an episode where I've talked about the inconjunct, but, so trines for the purposes of this conversation, we're not going to get too jazzy or mathematical about it. We're just going to talk about them as groupings of signs that are in the same element. So a natural relationship between signs in the same element. So, you know, Aries, Leo, Sag all have trine relationships to one another. You know, we could talk about a grand trine. We got all three of them activated together. But again, just signs that are in the same element together. And this energy came through to me, and then I'll describe a little bit about how you might work with it in your chart actively. It really came through to me as a symbol in astrology of inherent value. And I think it really gets us at what, you know, sort of what you were touching on in terms of like value, sometimes feeling like it's a more activated thing within us that we have to continually sort of reproduce or reach for or provide some sort of evidence or proof of our value to then like get that reflected back to us. And it feels to me like when signs in the same element sort of join forces, that they're advancing the inherent value of their worldview. And of course, each of the four elements, I think, has a different value center. It values something, you know, different about the human experience. And I think when we strip astrology back, we can really come into the remembrance of like those differing values that someone who's very fire heavy or identifies with that energy, you know, has puts maybe a different weight around self-significance or around the expression of vitality than someone who is, you know, really heavy in earth and might really be putting more of a focus on the tangible materialized experience of the world and, you know, the resourcing of the world, things like that. And so I think returning us to the trine firstly reminds us that each of the signs or each of the elements has a different value center. And so we can kind of start the conversation maybe from there in terms of worthiness, remembering that we're all like every sign and every element has its own like worthy, like gift that it's sort of bringing forward. And we also each have different wirings in terms of like how we assess our own worth or what we find to be worthy in the world. And then secondly, I think like there's a kind of beingness that I really identified with when I was like thinking about that question of like, you know, worthiness as a like an activation versus worthiness as just sort of a reception. And there's something about, I think, thinking about trines, thinking about groups of signs in the same element or pairs of signs in the same element that almost gets at that like breaking of that binary between like the doing and the being. Because there's something that happens when we turn up the knob on a particular element and advance its value that is active, that is saying like, okay, I find fire to be of value or I find air to be of value. There's an activation around that, but there's also an inherent beingness in like the energy of the trine. Like I find that to be of inherent value. And that's something I like essentially I'm going to sort of claim as my am-ness. And like, I don't know, I'm still sort of working that through, but there's something to play with, I think, there. And so I think what you can actually do in your chart, and this doesn't mean even that you have to have a like, so a trine in your chart would be, you know, and again, we're stripping this down in a more straightforward sort of sign by sign way, but a trine in your chart would be that you would have two planets both in a sign of the same element, so two or more planets. So, you know, you might have a grand trine if you have three planets or whatever. But like, you know, you have a planet, you have your moon in Libra, and you have, you know, Uranus in Gemini or whatever the thing is. I don't even know if that's possible, like thinking about Gemini generations of Uranus. But anyway, you get the point. And I think the thing is, like, you don't have to have them in your chart to activate them. You can just notice where you want to sort of grow in energy. Like, say you have, you know, your Mercury and Taurus, and you might not have any other planets, you know, in a close relationship to that in the same element. But you can kind of like fill out your trines. I was really caught by this phrase of like, you're really filling out, you know, when someone says like, mm-hmm. you're really filling out. And maybe we have like negative connotations about that, depending, I don't know, people have different experiences of their physical bodies or whatever. But like, that experience of filling something out and filling it up and like bringing it into plenitude. And in some ways, like whether or not we have quote unquote trines in our actual birth chart, like what would it be like to call in as allies the other signs from that element that we want to grow or to make more robust, or we just sort of feel as an essential part of ourselves? And this could be like, you know, you have, I know, Sandy, you have a really heavy concentration of Libra, you know, Libra stellium in your chart. And maybe that's about also playing with like trining yourself out, basically, like whether or not you have a Gemini planet or, you know, an Aquarius planet. And I don't think you do have either, right? Other than the South Node, maybe in Aquarius.
Yeah, that's right.
So nailed like, it. Kind of like plumping yourself up in that, being like, how can I kind of robustify, definitely not a word, that element by sort of like calling on that trine, that invisible inherent value of that trine to trick it out a little bit, to draw the properties in from those other two signs or that other missing sign or whatever it is in that same element to kind of create that diamond shape. Because even if we think about the trine and like that little, you know, kind of symbol for it in that pyramid or that triangle, there's a feeling I've always had in that shape of like leaning back into a harness or leaning back into, you know, something that sort of catches you and supports you. And so, yeah, just something maybe to play with, filling out your trines. And if you've got a grand trine, if you've got like something really, you know, special like that in the three signs of an element, you know, leaning into that. If you don't have any, you know, kind of just filling out those other signs in the element, just playing around with that a little bit.
I really love that. It's funny. You have a triangle on your shirt.
I do.
You might not have noticed.
I wore it especially for this recording.
Yes. I have the only trine I have in my chart is Chiron and Venus.
Ooh.
Chiron and Taurus and Venus and Virgo. And that's interesting just thinking about, you know, where I'm going to go with the conversation to Venus.
Let's go there.
Yeah, let's do it. So, yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I think with this whole thing about self-worth, I picked Venus to talk about because to me, Venus rules worth being the ruler of Taurus. And I was like, let's just go for what is there. But I picked it because it feels, and this could be my Chiron trine Venus, it feels like there's such a lot to talk about here because there's so many problems with how we think about all of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much pain too that's tied up in like, are you worthy? You know, like, and we get so many messages when we're kids about like, are we worthy? You know, do we have what it takes to be worthy? Are we doing a good job? You know, one of my relatives with the baby, the new baby, if the baby cries, she's being bad. And if she's not crying, she's being good. And this is like, you know, driving me crazy because it's like, no, she's fine. She's not good or bad. She's not worthy. You know, and of course, this relative isn't thinking about it like that. It's just like a knee jerk reaction, you know, but to me, it's like, oh man, like we have to perform so much to be worthy. But Venus could help us here and say like, no, you don't have to do anything. You just can lean back and embody that it's all already, you already have it all. You are already worthy and you're already full and you don't actually have to strive for anything. And so, you know, thinking about my path to like believing that I'm worthy and thinking about how hard it is for us to like believe that we're worthy or that we are like, that we have worth. Like, this is a really hard thing. Like, this is like not easy, you know, shift in our perspective. like it takes a lot of consciousness raising or something to do it. And so I was like thinking, well, what could Venus tell us about how we can believe that we're worthy and how we can actually like know it in our bones, you know? Mm. And I don't really know, but I have an inkling or a tiny, tiny thought that maybe has something to do with this pleasure, comfort thing. That maybe we can, or beauty, or that there's maybe, you know, as a double Libra, maybe has something to do with beauty or something to do with, not beauty is like, oh, well, I feel pretty today, so I'm worthy, you know, but like appreciating the moment as you're talking about this like chaotic time you're talking about, this like sinking into the beauty of the moment and being in it. And all of a sudden this question dissolves of like, am I worthy or not worthy? Am I doing enough or not doing enough? You know, am I performing? Am I good? It's like, you just are in the senses of the moment. Like it's just all existing all around you. And you're like locked in to the truth of what is, which is that like, it's love, you know, like everything is love. my like personal experience of having kind of a spiritual experience of believing that I finally like having this moment where I was like, oh, of course I'm worthy. And like, I like knew it in my bones in this moment was like, just, I don't remember if I was falling asleep at night or if it was just some dreamy moment. I had this sudden moment where I was like floating in the sky and the sky in my mind, not actually. And and in my mind's eye, like all I could see was this, like these colors that were kind of like, you know, like a kaleidoscope, almost. No, not like a kaleidoscope, like just like a color field where the colors were like one of those lights that like is changing from red to orange, to yellow, to green, to blue, to purple, is like going through and just changing. Like there were all these colors everywhere that were just like changing into different colors. And I was like floating in it. And in my mind's eye, I was like, this is love. Like, this is love. Like, this color field is love. I don't know why this was so profound, but something about it, like it was like some weird spiritual moment where I just was like, oh, I'm love. Everything's love. Everything is this color field and it's all love. And it was like so real. I don't know how to describe it except that. That's what it was. But it was so real. And I was like, of course I'm worthy. And from that moment, I've like felt this like sense of worth.
When was this? Did this happen recently?
This was probably 6 years ago or so. Not long, you know, not long, but not super recent. But like, it was so weird and so simple. So not weird. And it was so profound and also so simple. And I don't know how you create that or I don't know where it came from. But like to me, it was like a feeling of God or a spiritual thing. But to me, it came through colors and like, and that's where I'm going, I guess, with this conversation of Venus and beauty and pleasure and like how that could lead you to a feeling of worth. You know, like it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense kind of.
Yeah. When you're speaking about it, I'm thinking and, you know, it could also be an interesting just thing for listeners to like play with, like the relationship between Venus and Mars in their chart and like what that kind of looks like, what that call and response, because I'm thinking about you, Sandy, in particular as like a deeply Venus ruled person with a lot of concentration in Libra, but also somebody who has Mars in Scorpio. You know, it's sort of, you know, the ancient one of the ancient ruler of Scorpio and like what that dynamic looks like. And I don't know, maybe there's something to be mined from the conversation we have between sort of our Venus and our Mars signs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I had kind of recently my own like simple but complicated epiphany, I think, around Venus or something that it feels connected to what you're talking about. And, you know, I think we all play around with maybe at different points in our life, like making sort of statements of purpose or like the why we're here-ness, you know, and maybe we play around with this in different ways, depending on who we are, or where we are in our lives. But I had this kind of like drumbeat for years that was like, I understand my purpose. And my purpose is to like inject the mundane with like romance, to elevate the mundane, to sort of magify the mundane, you know, through all sorts of different, you know, roles that I played in my life. And over the past like year or so, I've started to feel like not that that statement is wrong, but that there's something about it that feels a little too agitating to me. Like still, like not that romance is agitating, but this idea of like elevating, injecting, like heightening, like it still feels kind of like it's purporting to be Venus, but like Mars is still like running the show, like behind it. And like in my own journey, you know, I have a Libra rising and then basically everything else is fire and mostly in Aries. And so I'm like a Venus ruled person in one sense, but I'm like deeply, deeply Martial. And like, I find the older I've gotten, the more like the simplicity of Venus, not that Venus is simple again, but like that sense of beingness of Venus is really coming forward. And the other day I just had this moment where I was like, you don't have to have this like tricked out purpose statement. It's not about injecting. You just are here to create beautiful or hope to create beautiful things that people can lie down in. And you can lie down in. And it felt like this whole different iteration of Venus energy that perhaps is more Taurus, you know, than it is Libran even, or maybe it's connected. But, and I started to balk at the simplicity of the statement inside of myself. I was like, what? Well, really? Beauty? I mean, like, it's not just like this love and light and whatever. And that's not what we're talking about. But it's like beauty or advancing beauty in the face of death, in the face of everything as a radical act. As like a radical act of simplicity, of serenity, you know, whatever the thing is. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just really resonating with what your experience was and being like, wow, like I just found immediate relaxation in my nervous system when I heard that message.
Yeah.
It was like, just make an environment where you and other people can lie down. And that's not to say that like beauty can't also be activating or it can't be an act of activism, or it can't call people into like consciousness around what is wrong, or like there can be an embattlement to beauty too, but like it comes, I think, through the advancing of the simplicity of it and the worthiness of it, you know?
Yes. Wow, I feel like we're doing some like bonsai tree, like we're like trimming away and like molding this word and this concept in like in a really unique way than I've thought about it before.
Yeah.
Is it my turn? No, it's your turn.
It's my turn. Yes. Yeah, we're getting like back into the groove after Sandy just like birthed out a whole human being. So
yeah, we're back.
Excuse us while we gather our children, our new children. Well, I don't have a new child, but you do.
You might have a few. These books are babies.
I got some creative babies out there, but I recognize that's not the same as a physical human. So my tarot snack, the thing that I want to bring forward is three cards, and each of them are connected to one of the earth signs in the zodiac. And I don't want to imply here, I think I have to kind of watch myself sometimes, because sometimes I really go off the rails, like fetishizing earth energy. And maybe it's because I have a dearth of it, or because all my own fire planets are in earth houses. So I'm like reaching for that experience. Or Chiron and Taurus, who knows? But putting my own personal psychological journey aside, it felt natural to bring these three cards forward as three different modes. I think not that Earth element has the corner on the market of claiming value, but we are looking at this through the lens of like how it advances itself through Taurus energy, which is, you know, a fixed Earth sign, Earth energy. And there's something about, I think, the fundamental resourcing that happens in the earth signs, like, and like the landing quality in each of the three earth signs, we're asked to like actually figure out our beingness here, like our 3D sort of beingness, and like land into the situations of our lives, figure out what resources we have on hand, figure out where comfort can be taken, how we can kind of take the shape of things in different iterations through the three signs. And so there's different ways to play with this. Obviously, there's multiple cards in the tarot that are connected to each of the three earth signs. But I'm just going to bring forward the primary card that came through for me for each. And then you can also play, I think, with the secondary cards. So the first earth sign, you know, that came forward, Taurus, the card that came forward connected to it was the King of Pentacles. And there's lots of different ways of thinking about you know, different astrological correspondences, especially among the court cards. So you might have a different, you know, vision for that. King of Pentacles to you might feel more Virgo or more Capricorn, but, you know, in the way that it comes through for me, it comes through very Taurus. And the idea that I wanted to bring forward with this card connected to worth was the idea of absorption. And I think it's a very taurine feeling, and not absorption that we might get in like Pisces, where we think about absorption as boundarylessness or fusion, you know, with kind of the ether or whatever that is, but absorption like the same way that you would put a piece of bread, a chunk of bread in olive oil and kind of soak up life. Like that's the kind of absorption that I really feel for Taurus energy. And in the King of Pentacles card, you'll see this in a lot of depictions of the card. There's a being that's kind of leaning back in the natural environment they're inhabiting. And like oftentimes the throne will be like covered with, you know, leaves and sort of overgrowth. It's a very fecund, very fertile looking landscape often in this card. And there's a natural kind of inhabitation that we see the figure sort of absorbing into their environment. And it's not absorbing, again, as we'd see like boundaries sort of loosening in a Piscean way or in a watery way, but it's really about just landing into our lives and like letting everything feel like an extension of our body and vice versa. And so energetically, I think you can kind of like work with this card in that way, maybe of like, you know, and there's lots of different cards in the tarot that ask us to consider how we land into situations or how we fit into situations and become like right-sized. And interestingly, like one of the cards that I really associate with the idea of right-sizedness is the Emperor, which is ruled by Aries. So I think in some ways, this conversation really continues from Aries, from Mars energy again, into like a Venus, into a Taurus conversation. And then the second card connecting to the sign of Virgo, and then other cards to connect with King of Pentacles, you know, or with Taurus could be the Empress, of course, you know, which is a very absorptive card, sort of about letting ourselves get flooded with sensation, filling in that way. You know, and then there's other Taurus cards as well. And then Virgo energy, the card that came forward was the Ten of Pentacles. And this is like a very elusive card for me. It's one of these cards that I'm like in a total lifelong mastery around understanding the nuance of. So I'm definitely not there yet. Not that I'm like there fully with any of these cards, but the Ten of Pentacles was really coming forward for me connected to the idea of assimilation in Virgo. Like if we think about, and they all happen to be A words in my mind, you know, I love a alliteration or whatever it is, a consonants, assonance situation. So absorption in Taurus, again, that feeling of like being present to just sort of like soak up life and let it in that way, fill with it. And then assimilation in Virgo energy, I think about even the symbolic process of digestion and choosing in Virgo, like which things sort of like vitamin themselves to our bones and which things are passed through and like what we're going to retain and what we're going to release. And in the Ten of Pentacles, there's a lot of meanings of this card, but I think one of them is to look around our lives in that moment of sort of arrival in the 10, which is the height of the suit of pentacles, the last number, and see everything like in its right place or in its usefulness, to sort of identify like, where has this experience landed in me? What am I taking up from this? What am I taking up from this? And it's sort of a sorting through our own maybe histories with worthiness and stories or experiences or all of these deposits that we have within ourselves around this theme, and maybe working with this card in that way. And then finally, the card that came forward for Capricorn energy was the World card, which in, you know, sort of technically or whatever in astrology tarot correspondences is ruled by the planet Saturn, which of course rules the sign of Capricorn. And the element, the A word that came through for me for this card was accumulation. Mm-hmm. The idea of like Capricorn being the final, well, you know, it starts off the calendar year in January, but the final of the three earth signs that we meet in the wheel of the year naturally from Aries season through to Pisces. And the sense in Capricorn where we have all of these layers that we've sort of like, we have the weight of now, like all of this kind of life deposits. We've maybe sorted through some of those in Virgo, and then they've sort of accumulated in Capricorn. And the World in some ways for me continues the work of the Ten of Pentacles, where we've sort of sorted through, we figured out the retention, the release, like what that story is. And then in the World, like we somehow are making peace or landing in the entirety of our existence. And I know that sounds like a super abstract phenomenon, but like, I think that this is like part of the conversation for me around worthiness is around like not having to extract. That's not saying that we can't sort through stories around like our worthiness or feel into our worthiness by also deciding like boundaries or deciding what's not worthy of us or what we don't sort of want to incorporate into our value center. But there's something about the fullness of the World. This is the last card in the major arcana where we just land in the entirety of it, like not in a sense of like total blamelessness or non-analytics or anything, but just like, okay, we get like, what would be like to like ask ourselves the question, can I be worthy of the entirety of my experience here? Like, is every experience mine on some level? It's maybe it's not even like a claim staking, but it's just sort of like a fitting fully into our lives. So, you know, you can play around with these cards. And of course, I didn't mention it, but, you know, connected to Virgo, like also the Hermit card really comes to top of mind, you know, other cards as well, but that one really pops. And then, you know, with Capricorn, we might consider the Queen of Pentacles, we might consider the Devil card, you know, these other energies connected to Capricorn. So it could be fun to, you know, pull out these three cards and do a poll for yourself, you know, which of these three expressions of sort of worthiness are calling to you right now, or to, you know, call them intentionally as you always can and sort of choose your own adventure and pick the one that feels most resonant for you in this moment. So yeah, that's what I've got for my tarot times.
And after you do that, you can do a little hypnosis. That was awesome, Bess. Thank you so much. I'm gonna re-listen to that. There was a lot popping for me with that run through the tarot cards. So with this hypnosis, I'm just gonna kind of like talk about it, and then you can go and do your own self-hypnosis. I won't guide in this session here, but it's pretty straightforward, so it should be pretty easy to take it. Go do your tarot card pull, and then just close your eyes and maybe turn on a little relaxing music and kind of just do this little visualization. And so I was thinking, like, you know, what is a hypnosis for self-worth? This is a very popular topic that people want to get into and use hypnosis because, as I was saying earlier, self-worth is like a tough nut to crack. Like, it's really hard to get this worthy feeling like in your bones for a lot of us. You know, you might be listening and be like, no, I've got that. And that's awesome. Do not, you know, that is like full and wonderful and great. And if you're there, that is awesome. And then for a lot of us, it's a journey and it feels like, I don't know how to stretch to just feel that reflexively, to just know. And there may be many reasons for why that is. You know, maybe you had a relative who was always saying you were a good or bad baby. I don't know, based on your crying, and you were like, I'm a bad baby because I need to drink milk and I'm upset and I'm crying. Like, I don't know. We don't need to know. You know, you don't need to go back through your whole childhood and figure out, like, well, why do I have this, you know, sense that I need to perform or act or do or you know, agitate or make something happen or be something, create something, have merit in order to feel that I can take up space in the world. You don't have to figure out exactly what it was or what it is. You might have a sense, you know, but that's not what this is about. And so for this moment, what I thought would just be an interesting kind of, because it's such, it is, can be a tough nut to crack, and there are many ways you could use hypnosis to try. I just thought it would be fun to really lean into this idea of Venus. And let's just like feel good, you know, like let's just be in the moment and like know that we each have, no matter where our lives have taken us, we each have a resource of pleasure, of feeling good, of feeling full. And like somewhere there's resources that we have in our memory where we have felt like good, you know. Even if it was just a small moment at age 8 or whatever, I don't know, but like we all have these moments. So I want to invite you to kind of just have a little resource area that you can visit when you are feeling like, hey, I don't know if I'm worthy. Just like forget that question. Forget all the like agitation around it. Forget like, you know, oh, but why don't I feel worthy? Forget all of the conscious thought around it. And just, let's just, you know, be in the moment of the senses of like some memories maybe, or some times that felt good, and start there. Yeah. And then from there, you know, maybe some new things start to happen or some new developments, or all of a sudden you're like falling asleep and you see this weird color field and you're like, everything is love. You know, I don't know. Not that that's the goal.
My mission is beauty. Lie down in my beauty.
Yeah. It's going to be really unique and personal for all of us, which is why I love self-hypnosis, because you're going to fill in your own memories, your own thoughts, your own experience, your own visual library, your own auditory library, your own sensory experience of your life here on earth. So what I want to invite you to do is first begin this by just imagining yourself in a favorite place, a lovely place, a place that you enjoy, a place that you, it could be a place that you know that you have physically been to where you feel really good. Could be a place in your imagination where you're like, I love the beach. I'm just going to imagine the most perfect beach. And I'm going to be there and I'm going to imagine the sunshine on my skin. I'm going to imagine the sound of the waves. I'm going to imagine the birds singing around me, you know, whatever it is, get that place, you know, spend a few minutes. This is how you're going to enter into your self-hypnosis. This will relax you. So spend a little time resting and just visualizing this beautiful place. And then from there, I want you to, you know, create a circle. So if you're on the beach, you could pick up a stick and draw a big circle in the sand. You know, if you're, you know, in a room somewhere, you can draw a light circle with your fingertip, like a wizard, you know, create a light circle, a big circle in that room. And you can call this your circle of Venus, and step into the circle and just start to remember times that you felt really good, that you felt maybe really comfortable, a moment of deep comfort where you were really relaxed, you know, a moment of pleasure where you just, your physical body felt really good and there was something really pleasurable happening, or there was something, you know, social happening that was very pleasurable for you, or something that you were doing by yourself that was very pleasurable. What you want to do here is just fill this circle with a lot of memories of things that felt nice, that were nice, that are imaginary and or real. You know, you could bring people into the circle, you know, a person that you just have a really easy connection with that you just enjoy being around that really makes you feel good. Bring that person in. A pet, you know, that you just love to pet your pet and you have this wonderful relationship with the pet. Bring your pet into the circle. Bring in a book, a story that you read that just felt so good and enjoyable, a piece of music, you know, whatever it is, bring these memories in, spend some time. There's no limit. And I'm sure that every time you come back to your circle of Venus, you'll have new ones and new memories and also new experiences that you want to bring into the circle. And let yourself fully experience the sounds, the sights, the smells, the tastes, the sensations of these memories. Build it up. Even if it's your imagination, you know, just build it up as much as you can. And if you want to test it out, you can do this next part, which is you could think of some situation that's coming up where you're a little nervous or you're thinking like, I don't know if I am going to feel comfortable in this situation, or am I going to feel like confident in this situation? Like, you know, I don't know if I'm worthy or I'm going to like do well or perform or whatever. And just imagine that situation from this place of all of these wonderful, positive, pleasurable sensations. Like walk right from that like spa moment where you felt so good right into the like the public speaking moment that you're imagining. You know, you're just flowing right into it and you're so comfortable and confident. And if you start to get nervous in your imagination, you know, all of a sudden a beautiful song plays or your pet walks by, you know, and you get to like hold your pet on your lap and like continue. So you're bringing together something that might be a little bit nervous making with this big resource well that you have of all of this pleasure and good feelings. And so, you know, when you're ready to leave your circle, you can say, thank you. The circle's always here whenever I want to come back to it. Count yourself up from 1 to 5 and open your eyes, ready to go on with your day. And then go back to your circle whenever you want. Add to it and spend time there. It should be a really nice feeling to be in this little circle.
Oh my God, from spa to stage. Yeah. I love this. I love this journey because I think it really gets at the heart of a lot of what we've been speaking about connected to worth. This idea of like a physicalized experience and a sensation of like, again, collapsing that binary between beingness and doingness. Like, I love this sense of like this Venus circle being something that we're filling with moreness, but like we're filling it internally. This isn't like an external act, that there's like an internal filling that's happening. That feels really, really powerful. And I gotta say, like, when you were speaking about the childhood stuff, I just had this like whole, you know, again, it's Bess and Sandy's therapy session, but I had this whole feeling, and maybe it'll pop up in another episode, but I really started feeling into my moon sign. And I was wondering where the moon lands in this conversation too, because, and maybe it's just because my moon is in Leo, which is like a little bit more of an activated, you know, maybe energy for the moon to be in. But I was thinking about how often in my child and how it sort of got going in my childhood, this idea that my moon in Leo was like the quality that was valued by people around me. And so there was a sense of like losing contact sometimes with the beingness quality of it and continually feeling like I had to reactivate it and represent it. And obviously we all have different relationships with our moon, but I was thinking about the moon being a really interesting, and maybe again, it's a similar conversation between sun and moon signs as it is between Mars and Venus signs.
Totally.
Like, what is that landscape look like in you and connected to like the moon, which is inherently full. I mean, we're not all born under a full moon, obviously, but like there's an inherent plenitude to our moon sign because it is a quality of beingness in us, you know, that we might look at in contrast to the sun, more activated, sort of the doingness principle. But yeah, what does that look like? Especially because I think a lot of us feel maybe more connected to our moons early on in childhood. So maybe we express those more, and then maybe we get feedback from the environment more about whether they're valued or whether they're not valued. I know a lot of people, friends, clients with things, you know, like moon and Scorpio, that over culturally sometimes like some of those qualities are, you know, not as like as amplified, you know, for a lot of reasons, like over culturally. And so people start to stuff down parts of their moon, or they start to like filter it, or I don't know. It's a conversation for a different day, but like what you were saying was really starting to like
get me fired up. So powerful. This inner child, the moon can so easily represent like one of our inner children, you know, and like what you had, how you felt that you had to, as you're saying, you know, I definitely acted my moon in Libra as like my go-to, well, I'm worthy if I make someone else feel good, you know, like if other people are happy, I'm worthy, you know, like if I can keep the outer environment stable, I'm good. Yeah. And that's a really hard thing to always be performing because guess what? You can never do it.
Yeah. Oh my God. So much healing. Yeah. I felt like I was like continually proving my worth, maybe by distinguishing, you know, by like standing up and out in some way, or it was maybe in some ways the opposite energy of the Libra, but also unsustainable, you know, because there was an inherent sense of like losing some of the trust in the beingness aspects of that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh man,
trust
listeners.
In the beingness. I also like that we got through this whole conversation without barely talking about money at all.
Yeah.
Money was like not even in it.
Money is just like a very end symbol for like something, you know,
it's the abstraction of the abstraction.
Yeah, totally. Well, listeners, ripeness, redolence, fecundity, fertility, all of the fullness. We hope that you are building trust in the knowingness in your bones, that there's always this boudoir of beingness that exists within you, a full and ample landscape that is self-replenishing. And until we meet again in Gemini season, we're wishing you all the treats. Hey.